Hi, Paul.
Hello, David. Hi. Okay, let's just launch straight into it so I don't have to edit the audio file. I'm Paul Scott. I'm interviewing David Streder, a regular commentator and small caps expert. We're not giving financial advice or any sort of share recommendations. These are just personal opinions only. I think that covers everything, doesn't it? So, okay, well, welcome back, David. We're talking on the 3rd of January. I thought we'd start off, really, do you want to give a sort of recap on how things went for you in 2015 and how you see the year generally?
Yes, well, I mean, as you know, Paul, we've had lots of talks over the year. I mean, I'm really at the small end of the market, you know, small caps, or even you know, maybe just moving up to sort of becoming bigger and medium-sized companies. Most of my investments are below 100 million market cap, even if they grow from there. And so, you know, I think of all the index that you look at, and I think most look at the FTSE as being an indicator, the FTSE hasn't done really very well at all this year. I mean, because of the companies that are in it that are trading around the world in mining and oil and resources,
the FTSE 100 is very heavily weighted, isn't it, in oil and mining shares, yeah,
down about 5% over the year, whereas the wider market has been a bit flat, I think, in listed FTSE all share, whereas the AIM market, which funnily enough is where I do sort of swim around quite a bit,
Actually went up, didn't it?
Yeah, I think the AIM 100, and I don't know who makes up that index, but it's, you know, you can get the constituents of it somewhere online. It's up 14.4%. So,
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, so the AIM 100 as an index has done really well.
The AIM all share wasn't up that much, was it? I think it was about 5%-ish AIM all share.
Yeah, somewhere like 5 or 6%, and I suspect, of course, when you go wider in the AIM market, you've got all the dodgy stocks that list there for whatever reason, not to help investors, of course. But But I mean, you know, the AIM 100. I don't know who picks it or who selects the individual, but the being up 14% had quite a few decent companies in it. Maybe they have the dividend paying ones, I'm not sure. But
I think it's just a general dollar market cap, presumably, isn't it? The largest ones, I would
imagine. It might be the top 100 by size. Anyway, the overall look back for me has been that there have been quite a few things that have come to pass this year that probably a lot of us were worried about and thinking about, but then finally hit, well, shit hit the fan, as they say.
what sort of things specifically do you mean, David?
Well, for a good year or two, Quindel had been...
Oh, I see, individual stuff,
as being something that was going to come a cropper, Globo, you know, one or two stocks where for whatever reason, fraud on the case certainly of Globo, ended up causing big headaches for investors. And I think, you know, we've always got to be wary of the overseas listings, you know, the Chinese ones. I think it's something like 95% of the Chinese companies have sort of come to a major blow-up this year or in the last couple of years. And that's not good for investors and certainly takes AIM down at the bottom end with it. So that's why when you see AIM stats that are actually positive, it's amazing as well. But it is
well, that's
true.
Right, yeah. Yeah, because if you avoid all the dodgy overseas stocks on AIM, if you avoid those completely, then you've actually got some quite good stocks to choose from, haven't you?
Absolutely spot on, Paul. And that's always my AIM. The AIM of me for every year is to go around, find management that are good, that are on AIM for good reasons, find companies or products or individual managers of companies that are really stars in the making and that you know that they're going to do the right things for investors as well.
Yeah.
You know, under promise and then over deliver, all the things that you feel good with as an investor. And if I can find those and a good solid group of them, I know I'm pretty set fair for the year, really.
Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing about your approach, what I've noticed, because we've known each other for about 15 years, in the investing space. I mean, you don't generally go for story stocks. You will go for the odd one, won't you? But most of your things are quite kind of under the radar, perceived as quite boring businesses.
Yeah, often boring.
But in a way, but they're often really cheap because people they look unexciting. But then something really good happens, and suddenly you've made a multi-bagger, like with Corshaw and quite a few others.
Yeah, I mean, who'd think a butcher could be sexy? I mean, you know.
I know. And it was 20 bags for yours.
Exactly.
It?
Yeah.
Amazing.
You know, but there was a story behind that, of course.
Yes.
But nobody really wanted to get to know it or believe it or get interested in it. But I saw the management were really good, and that was the important thing for me.
Yeah, your motto is management, 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 isn't it?
It is.
And I think you're absolutely right. I mean, I've seen your approach work better and better over the years. You know, this is an approach that just works, you know.
Yeah, why change it? And,
yeah, exactly.
You know, and you're right, I've been grabbed by the odd story stock. Everybody looks at the odd story thinking, well, I don't want to miss that one because, you know,
yeah.
I'll be really kicking myself if everybody else makes a fortune. But, you know, there are not many that I really get hooked into in a big way because, of course, I build up my investment in a company on many occasions. So I'll probably get hooked in for the first couple of drips, if you like, on the way in. But,
yes.
As soon as I smell that the management are filling us with, for want of a better word, hot air, you know, it does always get to the stage where I'm unwinding rather than building up my position.
Well, I think that's a very good strategy. I mean, that's something I'm trying to do more, and generally, actually, I'm doing more successfully myself. I mean, I went through my figures yesterday for last year's sort of trades and investments, and. What I noticed was that my win-loss ratio is about 60-40, so I had 60% winners, 40% losses. But the individual losses were quite small. You know, it was a couple of thousand here, a few thousand there. But the winners were big ones. You know, I had four big winners and only one big loss. And I think that's key to it, isn't it? Which you alluded to before, is position sizing to make sure that when you do get into something that maybe isn't going to work out, you don't put that much money into it, but you really back your winners with the big money, you know.
Absolutely spot on again, Paul. I mean, the situation for me over the years is that, you know, people joke about how I've got 128 or 138 holdings, but it really, and it is true, but the reason is I'm getting to know a lot of companies, I'm getting a nudge from other investors that I respect, and I'll think, right, I'll get to know that company if they're really keen on
it. I'm the same, yeah.
You know,
I'll do an entry. Yeah, exactly, I'm the same. I mean, you're probably like me, you've probably got an entry-level stake, which is an immaterial amount to your overall portfolio, and you just buy that initial stake for something just to get it on the screen so you have to look at it every day, and then you do more and more research over the coming months, don't you?
You build up your position. If they're small companies, which, you know, inevitably with me they are, I probably couldn't get that many shares in the first stab at it anyway.
Yeah.
So I need to build my knowledge and my investment in it.
Well, one of my favourite stocks, which I've mentioned before, I mean, I had to buy in about 35 different transactions. It was just a question of nibbling it. You know, very, very slowly, smallish amounts each time. And it took me, you know, it took me three or four months to get to the position size I wanted without moving. And even then, I think I moved the price up against myself, you know, but in the long run, it won't matter.
As long as you're comfortable with it and you've got to know it enough, you can then sit with it and, you know, you can ride out the odd bit of, you know, they are.
Bad news, yeah.
You've got to be able to ride out the little movements that they will have and feel comfortable with them. Oh, I've lost you, Paul.
Down. I was just saying Zitronic just starts plunging down every now and again, four or five times a year, maybe. And everybody starts panicking and saying, oh, there must be a profit warning coming, I'm selling. And it sort of feeds on itself. But the company's actually performed really, really well. And the shares, you know, are reaching a new all-time high. And I don't think you can really glean anything from small-cap shares charts.
No,
because
no.
They're too illiquid, you know, and people...
I don't do all that charting. I mean, I don't want to give you the idea that I don't like charts. I do. I like seeing the general direction of the movement. But
yes.
I'm not interested in trying to plot where they're going to be in a certain time frame just from a chart.
No, not
I'm interested in the real long-term performance.
Yeah.
The other thing that's really important, I think, of getting to know a company, what it does, and the management, is that when, say, false news comes out, where people interpret that something's going to be really bad for the company, and you see on the bulletin boards that one or two, should we say, strong voices will then say, oh, it's going to collapse, that's a disaster for the company, and everybody gets scared because they read somebody else saying that. And the share price then starts to tumble. Of course, then it hits stop losses and all sorts of things are triggered. And before you know it, it's down 20%.
Well,
I just ignore that to a certain extent, unless I really do feel it's bad for the company, of course. But I'll ring the management immediately because they've got to know me because I've been the one who's been asking them lots of questions in the past or getting to meet them at an AGM. And I just ask them the straight question, is that bit of news likely to be something that I should be looking into and what should I be looking at to make sure I know what's going to happen to the company? They're obviously not going to say to me, oh, we'll be doing a profit warning tomorrow morning.
No.
but the fact is, I will get a very good steer on what I should be looking at and whether I should be worried or not. And that gives me the confidence to stay in a company because I'm getting the correct information back.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't take it from bulletin board people.
No,
I take it
they're
from
a
management.
Waste of time. Exactly. Yeah. I think I'm increasingly coming to the view, Tom Winifred put a thing out about this yesterday, that the bulletin boards are just a total waste of time in the main. I agree. When something goes wrong with a company I hold and it's a company I know well and it has a good long-term prospect, I don't sell, I buy more. But each situation is unique. You know, you can't, there's no right or wrong general rule, is there? You have to look at each individual situation and say, is this something that the company can recover from over, say, 6 months? Or is it something more dangerous? You know, DX Group caught me out. I caught the falling knife on DX Group, unfortunately, and it hasn't bounced at all, that one, which is very, very surprising. But
that's one where, you know, I've never met management. Clearly, it came to market probably because somebody wanted to sell shares in it and get de-risked.
Yeah, well, it was curse of private equity again.
Yeah.
They dressed it up for sale, you know, made it look cheap on PE and divvy basis, and people who bought into it lost 80% of their money. You know,
we're never going to know more than they are. They were the sellers, so
I agree.
We've just got to stay clear of things like that because it's
I think most small cap floats are terrible.
Yeah,
absolutely. Sure. You know, they nearly all warn about, well, not nearly all, but so many of them warn on profits. Within the first 2 years. Okay, let's look at some individual stocks. Now, normally I ask investors to talk about their three favourite stocks, but given that David has 138,
well, 138, I think. Yeah.
Well, I think it probably better just do a quick fire, you know, sort of rapid comments on each stock.
Well,
you give the ticker, the name and ticker.
Yeah, first thing that I will say is that every year, I mean, I don't like showing a whole portfolio because it'd take me forever. Every year on the Motley Fool, I do list the sort of 15 or so stocks that are my core, if you like, my top 15.
Yeah.
I can tell you that last year, that's 2015, every single one of that top 15 was in profit. It was positive.
Brilliant.
In percentage terms, some of them have doubled. You know, I mean, it's been a great year. There's no doubt about it. Good solid stocks on AIM have done really well, and dividends on top. So my overall top 15 were up 41%, the ones that are listed on the Motley Fool, which people can see, so I'm not pulling the wool over anyone's eyes and including things that have not been there before, you know, there are some really good companies in there, but I'll talk about a few of them.
Are your favourites now, then, the ones you're going to talk about, are they?
Yeah, I'll pick out a few that I think are going to do. I always like the ones, and these are not necessarily even in the top 15, but I like is where I really see them as having relatively low risk of going down, because the way to preserve your portfolio is to watch out for things that can catch you out. And
yes.
People often say, oh, you know, you're telling us about one that's already done really well. Well, you know, Crawshaw's is my biggest holding. Crawshaw's has done phenomenally well. I wouldn't want to mention that as one to invest in now, even though I still believe in what they're doing, because there is a risk that if it doesn't do as well this year, the share price could come off a fair bit because it's on a high sexy rating for the rollout of all the stores. So I'm going to look at, you know, two or three that I think have done well and they're excellent management, but because of recent situations, they are in fantastic position this year now to do really well and outperform.
Right, far away.
Yeah, the first two that I'll mention are literally linked to the recent bad weather that we've had and repair work and renewal work that's going to be needed on the railways, for example, and the roads, and the infrastructure projects around the country, you know, the flood defence work that's going to be needed.
Mm.
You know, I think we've only heard the start of it so far with, you know, the north v south divide. There'll be a lot of pressure on making sure that all these flood defences are not going to get beaten next time. So I think two companies that are going to, you know, gain big time are Renew Holdings, which is a ticker of RNWH, and RTC Group, which is RTC, is the ticker.
Yeah.
One's very small, RTC Group, and they got a five-year network rail contract, and they provide a lot of the work on some of the railway lines. So, you know, I can imagine that they will do very well over the next few years with the contracts that they've got. But also, they were really lucky in a sense, because I think you were an investor in them quite a while ago.
Yeah, I sold too early. Usual story.
Yeah, well, it was feared that they would lose quite a bit of work out in the Middle East.
Afghanistan, yeah.
In Afghanistan, because they were doing support work for the troops. But of course, just recently, we've had the troops going back in because there's we're getting problems again in Afghanistan. And also, there are other parts of the world, no doubt, linked to Syria, etc., that, you know, we're going to have to action things in places that are far away and they need support workers. So,
have RTC said that they are involved in that? You know, are they
were involved in the Afghanistan support work, and they were winding that down. But as far as I understand, and you can see some things in the news, we've had to go back in or keep the troops there instead of bringing them out because I think the local Afghan troops are not really being able to cope, and it's
But do we know that RTC are definitely involved in that or not? They may
we definitely know that RTC are in there.
They're still there.
They said that they would be unwinding the contract.
Oh, I'm with you.
Coming
out.
So it looks like they probably won't be able to be unwound quite as quick as they thought.
Oh, I'm with you. Okay.
So I'm working on the assumption that they're probably not going to be coming out as they expected. Mm. But also that they'll be needed as well to help with other government projects. But anyway,
and that's 10.5 million market cap at 73.5p. That one, isn't it?
Yeah.
Forward PE of 8.4 looks quite appealing.
Yeah,
my only slight worry with this one, I think. It's back on the dividend list as well. 3% dividend yield.
Yeah, pays a dividend.
My only slight problem with this one was when I dealt with the shares, it was incredibly illiquid. It might have improved a bit, the liquidity. I don't know, and the spread was
wide. It has improved a little bit, mainly because I think a lot of the shares were in fairly tight-knit hands originally.
Yes.
I bought mine.
Didn't a director sold a big chunk?
That was it. I bought mine mainly because one of the directors, non-exec director, was leaving and wanted to unwind his holding.
And that
took the share price down as opposed to when they'd had good results. So I thought it was a bit suspicious. Met with the directors and they said, no, he genuinely wants to sell. He's got other things he wants to do. So I bought. And I mean, it's four bagged since I bought them. So I can't
complain.
He must
be kicking himself. Yes.
I hope he had a very good reason for whatever he was investing in.
Yeah. Well, let's hope he didn't buy Globo shares with the program.
Well, yeah.
So the forward PE on it is still quite reasonable at 8.4, although it does have debt, so which needs to be factored in. My only question with that one really is that it's priced sort of when you adjust for the debt and so on, it's priced on a similar level to much larger and more liquid recruiters. like Matchtech, for example, MTEC, which looks very good value at the moment, and one or two others. So why would you go for a real minnow as opposed to one of the larger ones?
Well, pure and simple, Paul, really, is that I've met the management. I like what they are doing and the size of their space that they have. Mm. They're punching way above their weight. So, you know, they've gone into this. They're one of only four companies that have been awarded these Network Rail contracts. You could argue that they're getting millions and millions of pounds of the work in scope over the next 5 years for a real minnow. So it will mean a lot more to them, this contract over 5 years.
I see, yes.
Than it would to a bigger company.
Yeah, disproportionate upside.
I'm getting all the upside ready to be scaled in with less of a problem on the downside. You know, it just feels to me like a good position.
Okay, so that's an interesting one. Now, Renew, let's circle back to that, because it's in a similar sort of thing, isn't it? RNWH. Much bigger, 240 odd million market cap, I think. Yeah, 245 million market cap. So run us through that one, David.
Well, they are in lots and lots. I mean, it's not just railways. They are in lots and lots of different utilities and services. Mainly, they do repair and infrastructure work, which they started the past year figures by saying that they'd from pretty much what they called one-off work, which was major sort of repairs. You'll probably remember that incident in the last floods in the South Coast, where the railway line taken away in Devon and Cornwall.
Hello?
Are you there, Paul?
Oh, yes, no, far away, yep.
Yeah. The railway washed away in Devon and Cornwall in a place called Dawlish.
Oh, yes.
And they were called in at very short notice to repair that, and they had to repair it as quick as possible because it was a key line linking up Cornwall.
I remember that.
And, you know, I think they actually finished that work, I think it was 2 or 3 days ahead of forecast. Mm. So they were paid very handsomely for doing that work. We're now seeing in the north lots of railway lines being taken away. You know, it's the same almost as of the Dawlish situation, where you need specialists to come in and get those lines repaired as quick as possible, get everything back to normal. And they have a specialist division as well that I think it's called Seymour, where they have teams of engineers that come in and help with defence situation to prevent further flooding in the future. Well, you could argue flood defence work is going to be one of the key things.
It's very topical, isn't it?
I think they'll be in there getting a lot of contracts. You know, they're a much bigger market cap, but then again, it'll be much bigger scale work as well.
I mean, obviously, I've had my say already about the balance sheet on this one, so I won't go into all the detail on that. But for me, the balance sheet's much too weak. Not a problem in the good times, you know.
No,
the good times
I
keep
agree.
Rolling, doesn't matter. But
I know exactly where you're coming from, Paul. And you know, it would worry me if they had lots of contracts going wrong, but they do feel to me like management that know exactly what they're doing in contract work. And they set a lot of contracts up where they don't roll into further contracts with the same company. So if something went wrong, it would only be a very small part of anything. They're very careful how they do things. So I appreciate that you look at a balance sheet and you think, oh, that doesn't look quite as sound as you would want it to be. But they have been increasing their margins over the last few years because they're going into much more specialist work. And their contracts do seem very sensibly set. Mm. Their figures better and better.
The P&L figures look great. If you ignore the balance sheet completely, then the P&L looks great. I can see why people like it. But something I did notice as well, looking at their most recent set of accounts, they're showing the pension scheme as an asset within fixed assets, but there was actually quite large deficit cash outflows of about $4 million per year. So I think people should look, which is possibly the difference between the accounting and the actuarial valuations. You know, one's a surplus, one's probably quite a big deficit. So that's something to maybe have a double check on. Let's move on. We need to speed up a bit, I think, Dave, to mention some more companies. So
yeah, another one that I like is Universe Group.
That's UNG.
UNG, the ticker. They're a company that provide, well, their origins were in loyalty cards and services for the forecourts for fuel suppliers.
Yeah.
But they've moved recently to providing software systems for the much wider retail market.
Mm-hmm.
And when we last met them, they said that they had quite a few retailers that were looking at them, but they hadn't signed anyone up. And then 3 days later, they signed up a very big contract with Conviviality Group, which is the retailers for the...
Bargain booze.
Yes, bargain booze. So they're proving that they're going now into the much wider retail space. And I just sense that they could have... We know they've got a very good product, that they're highly favoured. It's just a question of, you know, getting it out there to a much wider audience.
Yeah, okay. This one, I mean, I had a quick look at the numbers while you were talking. This one's 20 million market cap, Universe Group, 8.75p a share. It comes out well on Stockopedia system. It's got a stock rank of 98.
Good.
And the progression of the P&L numbers over the last 5 to 6 years has been very good, actually. Operating profit sort of has gone up quite nicely from about $500,000 a year level to sort of 1.7 million a year. So I'll definitely take another look at that, a fresh look at that one. Haven't looked at it for a while. Doesn't pay any divvies, though.
No, probably won't while it's in the growth mode of taking on lots of contracts, of course. But the management are very good there. I rate the management.
Are they?
Recently, there's been one or two what I would call canny fund managers building stakes.
Okay.
These are all good things, I think, for looking at a company.
Well, I'll take a fresh look at that. Thanks, David. Okay, let's do quick fire, sort of a few more companies. Shoot them out.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to mention, funnily enough, companies that have done really well over the past year and seem to be continuing to do well.
Right.
So
yeah,
TrackMate is one, Tristel is another. These are companies that have really done exceptionally well over the last year.
Okay, so let's do TrackMate. So that's T-R-A-K is the ticker.
Tristel is T-S-T-L.
Yeah, TrackMate's £3.56 a share at the moment. It did a placing, didn't they, at £3.30 or £3.35, just a small placing?
Yeah, just recently, yeah.
Only small, though, was it? 121 million market cap. This is a telematics company, isn't it?
That's it.
Give us a quick...
I won't go into a long rundown on the company, but basically their management are very good. They seem to be getting lots of deals with big companies in the insurance sector, and I think the recent deal was done with the AA, if I'm not wrong.
And those
are the sort of companies that when they seem to get these good names behind them, they really start to eat into a sector. And I just think that they're going to keep going from strength to strength. You know, one thing I will also say about them is that as investors, we try and encourage management to engage with the smaller investors, because in small caps, it's so crucial to have a good relationship with investors.
Yeah.
You know, they depend on us, really, to create liquidity. And TrackMate were one of the few companies that at their AGM this year said, we're not just going to have a voting mechanism at the AGM, we're going to give you a presentation, we're going to give you the chance to meet more of the staff than just the management. And they really put on a fantastic AGM. They had it filmed, which is another good thing. So if you go to
It's on Tamsin's site, isn't it? What's
it's on Tamsin's PI World.
PIworld.co.uk, isn't it?
Yeah. So, you know, they can catch the TrackMate AGM and presentation. And these are things that you then feel good about going on behind the scenes. You get to know what they're doing. They showed us the products, how it works. So you feel
you know the
company much more than you do from a distance just reading a balance sheet.
Mm. I totally agree. I think they're excellent. I spoke to the management there years ago when the shares were 18p. And I remember thinking at the time they sounded really, really switched on. I couldn't get any stock, unfortunately.
That's another one, Paul, where you've just got to build your stake slowly but surely. You know, you've got to keep buying whenever there's stock available, really.
Yes, yes. Okay, Tristel's another one I like. Although, again, as with Trackmate, probably a bit pricey now.
TSTL
is the ticket.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not suggesting at the moment that it's one to it's not, it wouldn't be in my top three, as it were, to buy at the moment. But it's certainly one that I think management are good. They've got a good product. It seems to be giving out good news. And they're, as with all the management that I like, I try and get them to be in a mentality that don't go overboard promising the world.
Yes.
Under-promise. Over-deliver is beautiful, and these are management that just seem to keep doing that.
It's a nice one. I like this one, but it is very pricey. But it's got cash, and it's a 2% dividend yield as well.
Yeah.
I think the breaking into the US market is the reason why.
Yeah,
that's
where there might be a bit of excitement eventually.
Yeah. If that happens, then it could go up a lot more, couldn't it?
Okay. I think they've also been breaking into Europe a little bit recently as well.
Right, and this is a disinfectant wipes in special packaging, isn't it?
Which mixes
the chemicals or something. Yeah, no, I do like that one. It's not one I hold personally, but I did. Okay, a few more, David?
Yeah, one that actually, which some people like, the fact that it was actually the least performer in all of my top 15 last year, but actually had news that which was getting better and better, and they made a big acquisition last year, and that's a company called 1PM.
The ticker is OPM. Yeah, this is a lending, an asset financing business.
They lend money to businesses where clearly the banks have not been performing in that area recently, and they stepped in and give the money out. They obviously get a good return for it in interest payments. But the management are very good. They're not the sort of management where they're highly paid and think that they own the company. They've actually been very steady performers over the last 3 years, and recently bought another company based in the north of England.
There's now almost two forming
parts of the business now.
And
yet it only went up 5% last year, and I think that one this year will actually outperform.
Could have another leg up.
Yeah.
Okay. I do like that one personally, but I worry that as the banks sort of strengthen their balance sheets, they might start going back into asset financing. These guys, OPM, have made big margins, haven't they? While the banks have been sort of out of that sector of lending. How long will that continue? I don't know.
The only thing I will say there, Paul, is my first worry when I looked into this company was that surely the banks will come back or there'll be competitors that will eat into the space. They see that it's doing well.
Mm.
It hasn't changed at all. If anything, their margins are improving because they're improving their systems all the time. To be honest, Paul, the bank's got in such a mess, and really, it's the computer says yes or the computer says no. They don't have people really look at anything these days. It's just,
They still seem to be averse to funding SMEs, don't they, the banks, generally?
They do. I mean, eventually, I guess, they'll force them into it. But it's almost as if they only want to do the really,
The big stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, that's a good one. A couple more?
Well, I mean, this one isn't something that is worth going into now, but I want to try and give people the idea that there are themes that you don't always think about instantly that can be very good for you. And that's Pure Wafer. I don't know if you...
Oh, yes, I know this one. This is where the factory burned down and the insurance proceeds were so much greater than the value of the company, they didn't rebuild it. They're just going to hand the cash back. And it's about four times the value of the company before the factory actually burned down, doesn't it?
Yes.
Amazing.
Yeah, I mean,
special situation.
Yeah, and the story here is essentially that if you have cash, and most investors try and keep some cash aside, it's not always necessary to go in for a long-term story. This was actually quite a short-term story because it was a special situation created by, as you say, not knowing exactly how much cash was going to come back, but it was an insurance repayment case. And then of course, the management didn't want to give the investors too much excitement because they wanted to keep everything on a low-key basis, purely because they had workers who tragically had lost their jobs because of
yes,
the
right. So they didn't want to crow about what a
no,
great...
No, it would be terrible saying, oh, look, investors, yeah. You're going to get lots of return here. So yeah. Whenever we had the information out from the company in RNSs, you pretty much had to work out that the base case that they were giving was probably an absolute worst case it could ever be. And then look at the positives that could be better than that. And
yes.
So each time, if you invested when they gave information, you were going to be in a very good position if it was ahead of that.
Yeah.
And so it was a very nice place to put your cash for the last year, in fact. I mean, the first...
Yeah, well, that's a very good point, because rather than keeping it in the bank and earning 0.5% or something, you can instead invest in special situations, which are themselves 100% cash backed or more, can't
yeah.
you?
Yeah. Exactly.
I wouldn't do that with resource stocks, for example,
no,
because
no,
the cash
no.
never gets back to the shareholders in any shape or form.
No, and the management was straight about this. They were saying that we will be giving the cash back. They're not going to start a new
yes.
company up. They're not going to have any new company reverse into them or anything. It was always going to be we're handing the cash back.
Yeah.
And the story just got better and better over the year. You know, originally it said, we might be giving £1 back. Then it became £1.35 or whatever, and now we're at £1.80 or so in share price.
Yeah, well, somebody said to me they think there's upside on it even here. They think it's £2 plus. I mean, do you think that?
I'm not working, because we're really so close to the end now, Paul. I'm not working
yeah.
on there being massive upside at all. I think
no.
if we get £1.88, I think is my
okay.
indication, then I'm happy. But I mean, you know, that's been a huge return from a year ago
yes,
when, you know, you could have bought at £1.
Well, I mean, I think when the... No, it was less than that, David.
Oh, yeah, it was less than that, sorry.
It was 40p when the fire happened.
The original suggestion was we'd be getting £1, sorry.
Yeah.
I bought... In fact, I've got the notes here. A year ago, they were 43p.
I know.
And so, you know, that's a four-bagger on something that you were getting your cash back, which is absolutely
yeah.
ridiculous.
Well, this is an interesting thing, because years and years and years ago, when ASOS had their first fire at their warehouse, I think you and I both dumped shares that would have been worth, you know, about 50 million quid now if we'd held them, because
yeah.
we were worried about the warehouse fire.
Don't
but
keep reminding us, Paul.
Oh, I know. but yeah, it's crazy, isn't it? But the point is, I think, that providing a company puts a statement saying we're full insurance, including business interruption cover, then actually the insurance payout will probably... In many cases, be considerably more than the damage done, because
yeah.
you know they can massage the insurance claim to claim for, you know, and they'll end up with brand new machines instead of knackered old machines and so on if they do replace them. I mean, the Walker Green Bank recently had flood damage, and
yeah.
a few people immediately started to just knee jerk, oh, sell the shares, but the company, you know, said, look, we're fully covered.
Yeah.
Okay, so. And the insurers are going to make good, not just the physical damage, but all the loss of business as a result of it. So that, you know, which can often turn out to be an exceptional profit, I think, can't it? So,
yeah. So certainly if a share price falls significantly because of that, you should be probably buying, and you'll eventually get
yes.
back to where you were. Yeah.
Yes, or better.
Or
yeah.
better.
Yeah, no, interesting theme. Okay, we've probably got time for one or two more, so...
Yeah. The theme there is that special situations, payments that are coming out in cash, generally are quite good to get your head around and work out where you're going to be in a few months' time.
Well, look at the Quindell one, because, I mean, that's... I mean,
yeah,
what's it called? Touchstone, is it called, or something like that? No, what's it called?
Watchstone.
Yeah, I mean, those... I mean, it's a bit of a funny one, because you got 90% of the money back in cash, didn't you? And the equity stub has since sort of doubled or tripled in value.
Yeah.
So if you spread it over the whole number of shares you would have had to hold to get that 200%, it wouldn't be anything like that, would it? It would be something like, I don't know, 15 or 20%. But even so, it's worked out very well.
Yeah.
So, you know, an amazing... outcome, really.
Yeah.
That one twisted and turned, didn't it? Although Slater and Gordon, of course, who bought the Quindell business for £600 million, is practically bust already.
Yeah.
So there's no doubt
made a bad move,
they made a terrible move. They've wrecked their own company. So
yeah. I mean, I've never been involved in that one at all. But I like to get to know management, and I like to try and have something that I can visibly touch and feel myself to know where they're going. One that I will mention, and I know you've met the management as well, is Cambria, which is the
really good manager there. Although very highly paid, he draws a big salary.
He is, but he does own a very, very significant part of the company. I think he owns about 40%. So I suppose he could argue he's paid himself. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, he is the founder of the company, so it's difficult to argue against him taking a fair amount of money out.
I'm not sure. I'd challenge you on that. I think if somebody owns 40%, they should pay themselves, you know, a month's salary and take the bulk of it through their dividends, shouldn't they?
Well, it's just started paying dividends, so you might see a little bit of an adjustment on that. A number of us have given our views on what we think is a good way of doing it.
Ticker CAMB.
CAMB. I mean, the one thing I will say about the management at Cambria, because it's a much smaller operation than a lot of the other big car dealerships, they've got the scope to grow, and if they're doing really well for the car companies that they promote, they do end up getting put forward to get deals to get some of the underperforming dealerships working again.
And
the other thing that's very good for them, they're very quick on digital promotion.
Yeah, I remember he talked, when we saw them at a presentation, he talked a lot about social media and interaction.
Yeah, they feel they're ahead of the others in getting people into their showrooms and selling.
Yeah, they're very entrepreneurial. Yeah.
Yeah. So... And I have watched over it for the last 3 years. Whenever the monthly figures come out, which is the motor trade figures for sales of cars, when their own figures for Cambria come out, because they do issue obviously the half-year results and the full-year results, but also updates quarterly, you do find that they are ahead of the general motor trade figures. So, in a sense, if you keep looking at the monthly figures and then cross your fingers that they continue to be ahead, which there's no reason to believe they won't be, you're getting an advance indication of where the direction of the whole industry, if you like, and also Cambria are going. And they are performing really well. I mean, the fact is their profits are going up significantly, and they've made a couple of acquisitions recently, so that will help them to continue to grow even without any organic growth. But they do get good organic growth. But the fact is, their shares last year and the motor trade generally is getting the benefit of all these low-priced deals that, you know, I think it's something like 85% of people buy on these never-never schemes now.
Well, that's the thing. The car buying habits have changed completely, haven't they, over the last few years? People are buying people are buying new cars at much, much lower financing charges. And then only keeping them a few years or buying them on personal... Well, people are getting them on personal leases, aren't they?
It's
a no-brainer. But, of course, when interest rates rise, that's going to change, isn't it?
Yeah, so as an investor in Cambria, we need to watch for those things. Obviously, if interest rates in a year or 2 years go up, then it might start to hurt as people don't renew those plans. But I think people are really just going to keep buying, you know, what they do, which is an advantage as well for Cambria, because you have close contact with your customer when you've got them on these payment plans. They just call them in about 6 months before they're due to expire, and they say, hey, we can give you a brand new Mercedes now, or whichever car, at exactly the same monthly payment plan. You're not going to say, oh, yeah, that's fine. I'd rather keep my old one. It's just like telephones, upgrade. They're doing it with cars.
Yeah, and also, I think the other thing with it, they don't necessarily make that much on the sale of the new vehicles. It's actually the servicing, isn't it?
It is. When regularly come in to see you and get service, yeah.
You get the franchise dealership who usually services the car for the first sort of 3 to 5 years. So if there are the fleet of cars on the road in Britain now is much, much younger, so a higher proportion of them are going to the franchise dealer for servicing, aren't they? So, I like that one. I don't currently hold it, but it's a good company, good management, and it has a nice balance sheet, lots of freeholds.
Yeah,
so, yeah,
yeah,
good choice, David. Okay, we'd probably better wrap up because we've rattled on for about 50
minutes. Yeah, always easy to rattle on, Paul.
It is, isn't it? Yeah, yeah. Well, thanks for your time, David, and we'll speak again in a few months.
Yeah, and good luck for 2016 and to everybody who's investing.
Yeah, absolutely. Righto.
Take care.
Cheers, Dave. Cheers.
Bye.